My name is Becca, and you are listening to Tour Guide Tell All. We're your local, friendly neighborhood tour guides here to share with you the saucy and sometimes scandalous side of history, both local and national and international. We've got all the history for you. You're listening, though, to one of our mini episodes where we dig in on a particular, maybe lesser known local site or memorial. And today we're actually going to dig even deeper and talk about a particular statue. But before I get started, I first want to thank all of our listeners. Thank all of you who've subscribed, posted reviews, and support us on our Patreon. If you haven't, if this is maybe your first episode or you're just dabbling into our episodes, be sure to check us out online. You can follow us on Twitter at Tour Guide Tell, where we share lots of information and we want to hear your feedback. We're going to have some very exciting episodes coming up in August. We're going to be doing a focus on the 100th anniversary, the centennial of the ratification of the 19th Amendment. So we're going to have 4 weeks of really in-depth episodes about the fight for women's suffrage. And our topic today is going to have a little bit of overlap with that. So I hope this will kind of pique your interest for August. I want to talk about a statue that you have probably seen if you've ever taken a tour of the Capitol. I know many of us, middle school, high school, you came to Washington, D.C. for a weekend trip with your family. You tour the Capitol, you've got the person in the red coat taking you around, and you get into the rotunda, the big, beautiful rotunda under the dome, and there's murals, and up in the ceiling, there's the I'm just not even going to try. Maybe Dan can edit that out, but if not, you guys know I can't say apothesis of George Washington mural. But inside the rotunda of the United States Capitol building is a pretty sizable sculpture. It's called the Portrait Monument. The Portrait Monument features three female figures, and it's placed in this wonderful center. It's in the center, the heart and soul of our Capitol building. And a lot of people, you know, you take the tour, you see it, it's kind of cool looking, you walk by, and you never know that this monument itself, this statue, has an incredible history. And more interesting to me, the sculptor who made it is one of the most fascinating women in American art. So we're going to talk a little bit about her, and then we're going to talk about some of the controversy surrounding that statue. Now, the Portrait Monument was sculpted by a woman named Adelaide Johnson. She was born in Illinois in 1859. Her name was actually Sarah Adeline Johnson. She comes from a very modest, very rural background, kind of working class. Eventually, though, she's going to work her way into the St. Louis School of Design. And in 1878, she decides she's tired of being plain old Sarah. She changes her name to Adelaide so she'll sound more dramatic. Of course, there's not too much of an art scene where she is, so she wants to go to Chicago. Chicago, post-Civil War, this is really one of the places you want to go to study art. In 1882, she's 23 years old. She's rushing to her art class, and she slips and falls 20 feet down an unguarded elevator shaft, which is legitimately one of my greatest fears. So she falls down this elevator shaft. Luckily, she survives, but she's very, very badly hurt. Adelaide Johnson wisely sues the company, the building, and she wins $15,000, which today would be a little less than $500,000. So she's awarded a sizable financial sum for this accident, and that money is going to give her financial freedom. And what she does is she travels to Europe, because in this period, 19th century, if you really wanted to be a serious artist, you needed to go to Europe, particularly because Adelaide Johnson is interested in sculpture, and so she wants to go and really learn from the best of the best. So she spends time in Italy. She is exposed to a whole new sophisticated lifestyle. She kind of throws off the old rural upbringing. She's going to become very progressive. She's going to get connected to some pretty forward-thinking groups. She's going to dabble in spiritualism. She's going to become a pacifist, and she'll be a vegetarian, which is fairly unusual in the era. She's going to split her time between Europe and the United States, but she'll come back to the U.S. to take part in a really big event, 1893, the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago. So this is the World's Fair, 1893 Chicago. And every time we do an episode that mentions the World's Columbian Exposition, we always say we're going to do an episode on it. And I promise we're going to do an episode on the 1893 World's Fair. For the purpose of this episode, though, I want to tell you about a piece of the fair which was known as the Woman's Building. This was a big world's fair. This is happening almost at the cusp of the turn of the century. And this is a time when the suffrage movement is really building momentum. And so activist women in Chicago lobbied for a space at the fair. They wanted there to be a dedicated place to celebrate women's achievement, to highlight the movements that women were involved in, suffrage, of course, but also temperance and abolition and the impact they'd had in the abolition movement, labor movements, all of these important things. And really, this was a subtle way that they could lobby the suffrage movement to the thousands and thousands of people who would come to the fair. So as part of the fair, they actually approved legislation to create this women's building. They had a board of lady managers, which meant two women from every state, plus DC, plus women who were appointed to be members at large could come together. And they actually advised the fair on ladies' issues, and they helped to organize events for the women's building. For the building, of course, they went with a female architect. They got designs from 14 female architects. The woman who was chosen was a woman named Sophia Hayden. She designed a very beautiful kind of Italian Renaissance style building, and people hated it. They thought it was too maybe simple, too plain. They didn't think it was as dynamic as the other fair buildings, and she actually received so much criticism and scrutiny at the fair that she never practiced architecture again after this event. Now, they also hired lots of other female artists to work on the women's building. They had an official sculptor named Alice Rideout. They had women come and do additional decor and artwork for the interior. They even had murals painted by Mary Cassatt. Adelaide Johnson, at this point being a pretty serious working artist, knew that she wanted to have some pieces for this woman's building, so she submitted two works of art. She submitted a bust of Carolyn Winslow. If you don't know the name Carolyn Winslow, she was a Civil War nurse, she was a physician, she's the fifth American woman to graduate with a degree in medicine, she was a suffragist, so somebody very admirable. And then the next piece that Adelaide Johnson submitted was three individual busts grouped together, busts of Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Lucretia Mott, and Susan B. Anthony. So Adelaide Johnson, at this point in her life, has gotten very connected to the suffragist movement, very much influenced by her time in Europe and also kind of her progressive connections back in the States as well. So this is something she really believes in, and she wants to showcase these incredible women at the fair. These three individual busts of Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Lucretia Mott, and Susan B. Anthony are going to form the precursor to what we know as the Portrait Monument today at the United States Capitol Building. Now, this work is going to catch the attention of a woman named Alva Belmont. Belmont is a very wealthy woman who's a supporter of the suffrage movement and more specifically the work of the National Women's Party. Belmont loves Adelaide Johnson's sculptures and work, and she will, through the National Women's Party, get funding for Johnson to create the portrait monument sculpture that today we have at the U.S. Capitol. Basically, what Johnson will do is take those three individual busts, use those as kind of the models, and then sculpt them from this 8-ton block of Carrara marble. What they really, really wanted to do with this portrait monument, was to have it inside of the Capitol building as soon as we had, you know, the right to vote. Johnson wasn't sure, though, if that was ever going to happen. She believed that art could tell the story, and she believed that it was important that these incredible women, to her heroes, be kind of enshrined forever. But there was actually a lot of opposition, and not all of it from men in Congress. Susan B. Anthony came out publicly against this monument in 1904. She basically said she didn't want it in Congress because Congress didn't do the work on suffragism. She wanted it to be either at the Smithsonian or the Library of Congress. Eventually, though, the National Women's Party will be successful. They're going to get Congress to agree to have this statue dedicated at the United States Capitol building on February 15th, 1921. So this is a pretty long journey from the 1893 World's Fair to 1921 when this is finally dedicated. Now, of course, at this point, the 19th Amendment has been ratified and it's the law of the land, and they choose February 15th because it would have been Susan B. Anthony's 101st birthday. So it's this big publicity event. There were representatives of 70 different women's organizations there. Adelaide Johnson was there. We'll put in the show notes, there's some really cool photos from the dedication. Congress hosted a special reception to honor Adelaide Johnson, which was the first time a woman had been honored in that way at the Capitol. Johnson really saw this piece as not just about suffrage history in the past. She and Alva Belmont and the National Women's Party really saw this as a bridge, the past to the next generation, the fight for feminism unfinished, representing the next phase. The National Women's Party would introduce the Equal Rights Amendment almost immediately after the 19th Amendment. So this was a call to action. If you look at the portrait monument, you have those three incredible women, Stanton, Mott, and Anthony, but then there's sort of this fourth peak that is unfinished, literally undone, and many people see that as representing a place for the next woman or the next leader. There was an inscription originally placed on the portrait monument. I love this. If I ever got a tattoo, which I am so terrified of doing, this is the tattoo I would get though. So if one of you will put me under and put this on my body, that would be cool. The inscription read, "Women first denied a soul, then called mindless, now arisen, declaring herself an entity to be reckoned." So here you have all these women gathered at the Capitol at a time where very few women serve in Congress. You have this monument that isn't just to quaintly sort of acknowledge the 19th Amendment. It's a call to action for the next generation of women. It's a call to say, okay, we have the vote. Now we want equal rights. It's this emblem. And Congress is like, yeah, let's take our pictures. Let's celebrate. And then a couple days later, they're like, this goes down to the crypt. They get rid of it. They put it down in the crypt, which back then was basically a broom closet. And then Congress looks at that inscription, this whole thing about women arising and being an entity, and they're like, yeah, no. They paint over it with whitewash, and then later they would hire people to scrape the inscription off entirely. So today, you cannot see that inscription on there because it is gone. The portrait monument gets hauled down to the crypt. If you go to the Capitol building today, the crypt is open. It's part of the tour, but that wasn't the case until 1963. So for those first 40 years, they said it was brooms, mops, and this piece of art. There started to be more calls in the 60s and 70s and 80s for Congress to do something with this portrait monument, and Congress just kept refusing. Bills would come up, and they just kept saying it was too ugly, it wasn't good-looking enough to be in any other part of the Capitol. They kept blaming the weight. Oh, it's this heavy 8-ton marble, like we just can't move it. One said that it was so ridiculous that it was just three women in a bathtub. But if you have heard our, if you're a patron and you've heard our episode on the George Washington statue that got removed from the Capitol, you know that Congress is maybe not the best art critics. Finally, in 1995, which was the 75th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment, women in Congress started to take real action. Representative Carolyn Maloney of New York circulated a newsletter poking fun at all the excuses that were being used to kind of keep this portrait monument tucked away. So it would have little faux quotations, things like, "We can't move it because the next thing you know, they'll want us to pass the ERA." Or they didn't have the get out of basement free card with the little Monopoly guy. So they start sort of making fun of these, their male colleagues who don't want to have this statue moved. They estimate that they can raise the money to move it. They thought it would cost about $75,000 to move it. There was actually a big budget for Capitol art preservation and maintenance, $23 million. And so they try to get money allocated. And at the time, Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, refused to use any funds whatsoever for the portrait monument. So eventually outside groups raised the money. And in 1995, finally, the portrait monument was restored to its place of honor in the rotunda today. But I think that's an important part of the story, what happens kind of to this portrait monument initially. It's sort of, yes, we want to recognize suffrage and we want to be like, okay, women have the right to vote. And now shunted back off you are for another 75 years. Now, this is certainly the work that Adelaide Johnson is best known for, but her life really continues on this incredible trajectory. Before she actually finished the portrait monument, she did get married in 1896. She married a man named Frederick Jenkins. He was 11 years younger than her, which was pretty scandalous at the time. She lied about her age on her marriage certificate and made herself seem 3 years younger to make that age gap seem a little less weird. He was a bit of an eccentric British businessman. He was a vegetarian and a spiritualist like her. They really sort of had this match made in heaven initially. He did not have her change her last name. In fact, He changed his own last name. So instead of being Frederick Jenkins, he became Frederick Johnson. And he was quoted as saying, "It's the tribute love pays to genius." So in deference to her genius, he changed his last name, which I think is a pretty cool move. At their wedding, they had a female minister, very unusual for the time. And then for her bridesmaids, she had the busts of Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott, these busts from the World's Fair. As her bridesmaids, she put like little veils on them, and they were just there to stand next to her. So, I mean, if you want to have some famous suffragists as your bridesmaid, this is one way to do it. This marriage, unfortunately, doesn't last. It'll end after 12 years. I think given really due to Johnson's eccentricities and her sort of single-minded passion. She had a dream of a studio museum. She wanted to fill a working studio and open it up to the public to display art specifically centered around suffrage and the women's movement. She almost exclusively sculpted women, and she almost exclusively sculpted real American women who were working to make the country better for women. And so this was her passion. She believed that these busts and sculptures could tell the story. She knew that there was a chance that these women might not be remembered or that many of their names would be lost. And so she wanted to have a studio museum to share that story. She wanted this so badly that she just bankrupted herself, essentially. She would often work for free. She was very picky about who she would sell to. And often she wouldn't sell her pieces because she felt that the buyers didn't respect the work and what it represented. And she often felt that they were undervaluing her work. This is Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott. They're priceless. You should be willing to pay me millions for these pieces. And so she's sort of caught, I think, in this wedge of this really noble cause and trying to do a lot of important work and not making money for herself, but also being so obsessed with her own work and so confident that her work was priceless that she never really sold anything. Eventually, she faces some real legal trouble in 1939. She's basically facing eviction for failure to pay taxes. So she stages a massive protest in her studio. She invites the press and members of the political and art world to come, and she mutilates and destroys some of her work to protest this financial burden that's being placed on her. To try to kind of fix her money situation, in the 1940s, she starts to become a fairly frequent guest on radio and TV quiz shows. So trying to win prize money, you know, on things like The Price is Right and things like that, but whatever they had back in the 1940s. So she'd go on to these quiz shows trying to win money. She really did understand publicity. She was kind of regular for lying about her age. She decided to stage a huge 100th birthday celebration. She had the press out. She had photographs. She tried to use it to get someone or groups of people to donate money to the studio museum idea. The only thing about her 100th birthday celebration is she had it when she was only 88. So that took some of the wind out of her chance to raise money. She passes away in 1955. Some newspapers listed her age as 108 based on her weird 100th birthday celebration 12 years earlier, but she was actually 96 years old at the time of her death. So an incredibly long life Adelaide Johnson had, but it's a little tricky to sometimes pin down how old she was at any given time. Now, Adelaide Johnson is somebody who has actually quite a few little connections through Washington, D.C. Obviously, of course, there's the portrait monument at the United States Capitol building. It's part of what is usually the standard tour of the Capitol. So when the Capitol reopens and you go on a tour, you're able to see that portrait monument. She's also buried at one of our favorite local spots, Congressional Cemetery. Congressional Cemetery actually has a great pamphlet on women's history at the cemetery, specifically members of the suffragist movement there. So we'll be sure to link to that in our show notes, but you can visit her gravesite at Congressional. She also has several of her other busts displayed in various museums in Washington, D.C. The National Museum of American History has one of the busts she did of Susan B. Anthony. It's currently in the Creating Icons exhibit, which was done this year in conjunction with the centennial of the ratification of the 19th Amendment. We don't know at the time of this recording whether the museum is reopened or when it will be reopened, but you can check it out online and we'll have the link in our show notes. There is also another bust of Susan B. Anthony. This is a bronze cast from the original 1893 bust that Johnson did for the World's Fair in Chicago. This bronze Susan B. Anthony is at the National Portrait Gallery. It's in a gallery in one of the rooms at the Portrait Gallery that highlights other women of this era. So Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott. So if you take a National Portrait Gallery tour with us, I usually talk about Adelaide Johnson at this bronze Susan B. Anthony bust. And then finally, a site that we love and that we keep saying we're going to do a deep dive on, a full episode on, and we will one day, is one of my favorite places in Washington, D.C., the Belmont Paul Women's Equality National Monument. This is a building that was designated a national monument just a few years ago, in the last year of the Obama administration. It was originally the Sewall Belmont House, but this was the headquarters of the National Women's Party, and it's named today for Alva Belmont, who we mentioned earlier in this episode, and Alice Paul, who we'll be talking about a lot in August. This was the headquarters of the National Women's Party. This is where they did their work. And so inside, and in addition to all these incredible exhibitions and information about the National Women's Party, the fight for suffrage, and the ERA, there's also quite a nice collection of Adelaide Johnson sculptures, because many of her supporters were part of the National Women's Party, and much of her work was funded through Alva Belmont, who had this artwork at the party's headquarters. So you can see busts of Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Lucretia Mott at the Belmont Paul House, but also a bust of Alva Belmont, as well as the Caroline Winslow bust from the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. So they have not yet reopened because of COVID, but when it does reopen, this is an incredible site. I can't think of a better year than 2020 to go visit while we're celebrating this centennial, see Adelaide Johnson's work, and then you can see a little bit more about the women she was celebrating. So that is my little glimpse, my little dig into the portrait monument and its sculptor, Adelaide Johnson. She just overlaps into so many topics I love and so many places that I hope we're going to highlight in future episodes, including Congressional Cemetery and the Belmont Paul House. We want to thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to review and rate us on whatever streaming service you use to listen to your podcasts. And as we mentioned before, you can find us online at Twitter at TourGuideTell, or you can also shoot us an email at TourGuideTellAll@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on the episodes and what topics you'd like to see us tackle in the future. Thank you so much, and I look forward to talking to you guys some more as we get into the centennial of the 19th Amendment.
Tour Guide Tell All is brought to you by some of the fine guides at DC by Foot, one of the many cities covered by free tours by foot. And as we start to reopen cities, we are giving private tours. Please check us out at freetoursbyfoot.com. Tour Guide Tell All is Rebecca Grawl, Rebecca Fackner, Candon Arseniega, and me, Dan King.